Hello and welcome. I'm Greg Martinelli, and this is the Ag Sales Professional Podcast. And the purpose of this podcast is to make you the best salesperson or sales manager possible in agribusiness.
Welcome, everyone. Today, I'm joined by James Holsey from Taranis, and we're going to be talking about everything from ag tech to selling in ag to selling to ag retailers. So, James, tell us a little bit about who you work with in the agribusiness world and what it is that you do for them.
Greg, I'm a regional sales manager for Taranis, and I cover Missouri and Kansas. And what Taranis' goal and what our mission is to really help ag. We partner with ag retailers to help their agronomists and sales consultants serve their customers better.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of the main goal of it. And my entire career, I've worked extremely close with ag retail, and I've kind of developed a passion to help them. And so Taranis was naturally, for the company and what they wanted to do and how they want to take it to market really was appealing to me.
Well, that's great. We're going to dig into a little bit more of that, but you've got a history in agribusiness or in ag and both farming and some background there. So I know in talking to you, you grew up in the Texas market, in the cotton and sorghum part of the world. So let's kind of jump back before we get into everything that Taranis does and what you do for ag retailers. Tell us a little bit about your background in ag and what got you to all the different places you've gone to in the agribusiness world. What's your journey?
Yes, I grew up in West Texas. I'm a West Texas kid at heart, and I was born in Odessa, Texas, that's way West Texas. But I grew up from about third grade. I grew up in Plainview, Texas, from third grade till I graduated high school. Plainview, Texas, is really where I had my introduction to agriculture. So I didn't really grow up on a farm per se. But I started working for farmers at an early age, started with module builders. If you're not familiar with those in the cotton world, basically you're building huge bales, squares, I should say, of cotton. So I started off doing that. I don't know if you would call it a love or it's just you don't know anything else. And so that's what you do. What you do. But
well, it's the thing that you're most interested in. 18 years old, it's hard to pick what do you want to do for the next 40 years? That's tough for 18-year-olds. And obviously, for you and just like myself, I grew up in the suburbs and my exposure was my cousin's dairy farm. So I didn't ever farm. I knew and in 1983 when you got out of high school, interest rates and the price of land and the revenue source. I mean, you weren't going to go into farming necessarily, but you could go be involved in it. And so that's another good message for our audience is that you don't have to be from ag, grow up on a farm to be in the agribusiness world. And they're hurting. This is a plug for being in agribusiness. They're hurting for people right now.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things I want to touch on here.
Sure.
So let's pin my story for just a second.
Yeah.
You do not have to be from agriculture or whatever to be in the agribusiness.
Right.
I would argue that it would help the ag industry if we had more people that did not have a typical ag background.
Sure.
Come to the industry. I think in the ag world, I don't see it so much now, but when I first started in my career, everybody wanted somebody from the farm.
Absolutely.
Right. And it's just kind of what you know, and you just assume that those would be the best fit for the job. But I'm going to tell you, I've worked with location managers before that because they grew up on a farm, they got the opportunity. They're not the best managers.
Yeah.
I mean, they knew something about farming. Let's just put it that way.
Right.
And the best salesman may not always be that grew up on the farm either.
That's right.
And so I think our industry is prime for some different perspective, if you will.
Well, along those lines, while you're doing that, I went to an ag club meeting here recently, and there's something like 200,000 jobs a year coming available in general. 200,000 are coming available. The universities are only graduating about 30,000 a year. Now, some of that's going to reflect the fact that the boomers are leaving because there's just a giant generation. And Gen Z is big, but I don't think it's that big. And so they're struggling right now to fill spots, and especially 2-year tech degree. So some of the stuff that we may get into, which is like your precision agronomy specialist at dealerships, equipment dealerships, that there's wide open field. and they don't need a bachelor's. They don't need, you know, they need somebody that can jump in there and learn while they're running how to connect the hardware with the software and make it work and function. And so this gap is tremendous. And so you were going to have to pull from non-farm degrees and non-farm kids, because we know that the number of farm kids is just dwindling down to, I don't know what it is. I think the number of farmers is under 1% that feed the world.
Sure.
So your journey went from there, and then you went to college for ag econ, ag business. And let you put a plug in for your alma mater.
But I went to Tarleton State, one of the best decisions I ever made. One of the best decisions I made. And it all happened really by chance. I mean, I didn't have a plan to go to Tarleton State. I just knew I wanted to go to school. It just so happened that I ended up at Tarleton State, but got my degree there in ag business with a minor in economics. And I graduated there in December of 2007. And then in May of 2008, I was in a vehicle accident, and it was a milestone. It was a milestone in my life. There were several lessons that I learned through that whole experience, but took me back to Plainview, Texas, where I had to stay with my parents for a few months till I got back on my feet. From there, I was hired with Monsanto, and I started the journey in ag business from there. So,
okay.
I was hired on as a seed quality supervisor in south of Amarillo, so not very far from where I grew up. I started my career there as in seed production at their sorghum production facility. At that time, it was the only sorghum production facility that Monsanto owned. I got a phone call, and they offered me a job in Michigan, Constantine, Michigan.
Either Hawaii or Michigan, but obviously it's for sure Michigan.
It was a good move. It was a good move for my career. I'll just say that way. And so absolutely. There's, like I said, I look back on my life, and it's hard. There's so many things like that happen. It's hard to chalk it up to pure luck.
Absolutely.
So I went to Michigan in the seed corn production world, went from sorghum to seed corn. And I was there for a couple of years in seed production. And I'd always talked about eventually joining the commercial side and being in sales. And so you think about the mindset that you have in production, and how many bags did we produce this day, and how do we get faster, more efficient, all those kind of things. And you move to a sales side. And so it's kind of funny how all that worked out. I'm in Southwest Michigan as a seed rep. That's really where I started with the Calvin Asgrow. Again, one of those, as I alluded to earlier, working closely with ag retail. So they're the retail brand in agriculture. And so that's really where I started my passion in, I could say, coaching, developing, and helping young salesmen be their best. But was there for 5 years. And then my wife is from Missouri originally, and a lateral transfer to a territory that is in her backyard or where she grew up. So now we live pretty close to Kansas City. My wife and I have been married for 10 years. We've got two daughters. I'm a baseball enthusiast.
So great.
My oldest daughter is 7. My youngest daughter is 6. My oldest daughter's name is Kinsler, and my youngest is Kimbrel. So Ian Kinsler was a baseball player for the Rangers. And then he went to Detroit, the Boston Red Sox, San Diego, the Padres, and then Craig Kimbrel. Is still an active baseball player today.
Well, you got them all set up. You're in for the ride now. You got about, they're 6 and 7, whatever it is. You got about 13, 14 years of following sports every day, and cherish that for sure. So let's jump back into the precision ag involvement that you've got for what you're doing now at Taranis. You're calling on ag retailers in the 2-state region. One of the questions I always have when we get into these precision ag and the data, the combination of those two things, is this. I go to InfoAg and I look at the platforms and I think, wow, how does an ag retailer decide, I'm going to combine all my tech agronomy software with my data management software, and then I've got, you know, all the other softwares coming at me. I grew up in the 70s and 80s when computers took off, and everybody's like, well, you could see this happening. Like, no, you couldn't. There was, you know, a vast array of directions that computers could have taken us. And you kind of had to ride that wave with what's going to show up at the end. So I don't want to be the person that bought a Beta, which is the first cam VCR type recording device to play for TV. You bought those, and about a year later, they were gone. I don't want to be using MySpace when everybody's in Facebook. So how do you sort through all that with ag retailers, and how do you just jump into that mentality with them?
So there's a couple things. you know, you hit on a couple of things that I want to talk about here. So one is ag tech's not new, right? So yield monitors were being used in the early 90s. And then planning monitors and what else has come along throughout those years, roughly 30 years, right? The majority of ag tech at that time, of course, was, you know, early on was really driven by growers, you know, in their equipment. We're at a phase now when Monsanto bought Climate Corp is really what almost awoke this giant, I would say. Precision Planting's been around. They've been doing a lot of really neat things, you know, through their history.
Sure.
In the industry to help growers, you know, be more precise and do things more economical. You know, when you get into something early like this, you have a lot of big dreams and not all of them work out. So in the ag world, there's a lot of skepticism on ag tech and the technology and agriculture, because there's been a lot of overpromising, under delivering, sure. You know, issues that have happened. And so first of all, you got to deal with the skepticism of the retail side. What I would tell an ag retailer, number one, is find a partner that's going to help you serve your customers better, but also make your job easier. I mean, we've really got to focus on that. And maybe you've worked with them well enough, long enough. It's just been kind of what I've picked up, some conclusions I've drawn. I don't have the data to say this or not. But if I go from an 80-foot boom sprayer to a 120-foot boom sprayer, I can quantify. I can cover this many more acres. That means this much more revenue, yada, yada, yada. What we've missed out on is how do you quantify morale in your sales team or your agronomy team? And what we've missed out on is investing in technology that helps our team live a better life, have a better work-life balance, or whatever that word may be, flexibility. 8 or 9 years ago, I had a conversation with a friend of mine, and he called me, and he had just represented Monsanto at his alma mater for a job fair. He went to Mississippi State.
Sure.
And he said, you know, we were going through just a lot of different things that we were talking about. And the job fair came up and the topic, and I was asking him how it went. He said, you know, ag's got to figure some things out. I was like, what do you mean? He said, not one person asked me how much I made. They asked me how flexible my job was.
Right.
And so that was 8 years ago. And you can see it. You know, you talk about the gap boomers. And there's a big gap in there where there's not a lot of people in between. There's not a lot of knowledge and stuff in between there. A lot of kids that were coming out of college and they're just getting started. You don't see a lot of them hang around very long. They get burned out pretty quick. And so I think technology, you know, you got to think about how do you use technology to serve your customers better? How do you use technology to create a better workplace? And I mean, you know, recruiting, whatever it may be, how are you going to recruit your top tier talent when we had already started this trend? Like I told you 8 years ago, we had that conversation where 2020, all that did was speed this trend up and make it more relevant. You have to have a technology that's going to bring not just data. In agriculture, we've seen a lot of companies come through and they can create just a pile of data,
sure.
But there's not a lot of information. NDVI, for example, I can tell you where the quote unquote green spots are, red spots are in my field. But what does that mean if I'm sitting at my computer and if I want to be at my kid's baseball game,
and I
might look at my phone. What does that mean? I have to go physically look at that field to understand.
Sure.
You know, I think we need you to learn, you know, look at technology that actually brings information to the palm of our.
Well, and I think that's where this is going to eventually get down to. And the reason I dig into this, two areas we talked about, you know, turnover and work-life balance and employee satisfaction are tremendously more hot topics today than they were. And they were trendy 10, 15, 20, 20. I mean, I was doing employee surveys for my whole career from the 90s on, but the impact of what we're going to do with those things is important, because I think I always say this, we can't throw just a bunch of people at a job, have, you know, 10 people thrown into a job category, and then one of them survive a 1 year, 2 year. And that's in the role that I got hired into in early 90s, 18 people got hired with the goal of getting one after 2 to 3 years out of that job field. Now that one would be superstar great, and that's all they probably really needed, but we don't have that 18 people to hire anymore. We're down to we got to have a little bit more success rate. So I think to your point you know, what can technology do for you? Our agronomy, especially the agronomy team and in a few other industries, they're overloaded. And a lot of what they're getting overloaded with is the technology that was designed to make it easier for maybe the producer, but has made it harder for the ag retailer, or made it easier to get information. But now what do you do with all that information? I mean, the influx of dollars into CRM programs, customer relationship management tools, Salesforce being a very big one, the dollars going into that industry is tremendous. What happens is it adds actual work in the beginning. It can save time. And everybody that always brings me in for training will say, Greg, say something good about CRM. I'm like, well, let's talk about your specific CRM and how you're using it. And let me tell you if it's good or not. Because if you're using it wrongly, it's not good. It's bad. Actually, it's going to do a lot of disengagement and you're going to irritate people. So to your point, it's technology has provided a lot of information to us, or data. But what are we going to do with that data to make our employees happier, our customers more money, time, or whatever the case is? And I think that's a little bit of a realm of what we need to do in that. That's what I see as I call on ag retailers and I hear the behind the scenes, because I always ask, you know, what are you using for your precision ag? What are you using for? Because those companies on that end ask me, you know, what do producers want, or what do retailers want? And so, you know, I don't know if that goes anywhere with a question necessarily. It's more just a rant on, you know, what do we do with all this and how do we sort through it and use it?
No, I agree with you. It's on your CRM piece, you know, it can create a lot of work.
Sure.
You know, capturing notes, you know, some of the that's basic stuff. You should be capturing notes, but then you capture them and then you got to sit down at some point and type them in you know, I found that my best success is to write. I don't like to write a lot. I enjoy technology. I'm naturally drawn to technology, you know, that's why I kind of enjoy the ag tech space. But I've learned though that for me, capturing notes on a piece of paper and then taking them back and typing them has created a better follow-up system for me.
Sure.
I take them and I look at them again, because I have to type them in, and it prompts me, oh yeah, I need to follow up with this right. and this. It's not a bad thing. But really what a CRM tool should help a person do is understand, where am I spending my time? Where should I be spending my time?
Sure.
That's really what it should help.
I said, you know, it should help you turn left or right out of the driveway each morning. Yeah. That's what, if it's not doing that, then you've got to build it to where you can get the information in there and help you manage your territory. I mean, that's the M of CRM is management. And, you know, you're doing it somehow. You're doing it mentally. CRM is a concept that it's like precision ag. What were we doing before that was the case? Well, I don't know if we were pulling levers on the seed rates, or we were just blanketing and carpeting every acre with 200 pounds of whatever fertilizer. And, you know, now, I mean, it's just gotten to the point where we have to do that a little more strategic, because we're out of time, you know, and for agronomy, they're out of time, and the ag retailer, they're out of time, and the rolling stock has to know, you know, better planning of your rolling stock and how to. So let me ask you this, what's been the toughest challenge as you go out here? And, you know, I always tell salespeople, you got this one unique role, is that you go farm to farm to farm all day long, or you go agribusiness, you know, ag retailer, ag retailer, ag retailer. You get a unique view, which can be your superpower strength, that you see what works and what doesn't work. But what's been your toughest challenge as you've gone out here and done your role in agribusiness?
Personally speaking, as you know, in the last year, I really want to talk about the last year. It's probably been the most selling that I've done, if you will. I learned real hard that there's a difference between a rep and a salesman.
Tell us about that. What is that? Tell me a little bit about that part.
You know, when I was in a district sales manager, or field sales rep is what they're called now with Bayer, with DeKalb and Asgrow, you know, I was kind of a steward of a business. Now, I was making grower calls and I was doing some of those things, you know, and trying to help younger salesmen sell. But at the end of the day, the dealer was responsible for selling the seed.
Sure.
And I was helping them, you know, get programs and business plans and try to meet those business plans and all those kind of things. So that was kind of what I was doing. And then I come into, you know, the regional sales manager role with Taranis, and I'm selling to retailers now. I'm calling on owners and CEOs and, you know, chief this and chief that. And I'm really selling now. Right.
Right.
I will tell you the toughest challenge that I have personally come across, and I think this could, it doesn't matter where you're at in this industry and who you're selling to, is selling yourself. Why I say that is there's been so many, I don't know if I want to call them hucksters, but there's been a lot of flyby nights, if you will. And so when you first walk in the door, when you first call on somebody, they get called on how many times are these guys called on?
Sure. Every vendor.
And so product line, yeah. How do you show up different? How do you stick out? You know, that's probably been the biggest thing. My biggest learning, and this sounds almost elementary, but I read a lot of books. I've read a lot of books, and different types of selling and all these other things. Sure. At the end of the day, people buy from people.
Sure.
And that was probably the biggest thing that I had to come to understand. And so, you know, selling yourself and being relatable, and understanding their business and being genuine.
And I think that comes back to a question I'll usually pose to a group. And that is, how would you answer this question? And I do this hypothetical now rhetorical now, but the four questions a customer asks is, why should I buy from you? Meaning you, Greg, you, James, what is it that I'm buying from you? Because I can get this product from a dozen different salespeople. And why should I buy from Tyrannus? You know, why should I buy from your company? And then, you know, of course, why should I change and why change now? But the first two questions, you'd be amazed at how many salespeople. And I don't think you graduate out of that sales rep role until you figure this out, is why should I buy from you and your company? Because if you don't, you're always going to get compared by price to the other person that can provide that product. And so an American farmer has a lot of choices. I mean, and they're growing every day. You know, there's more and more places that they can go either directly through the internet or, you know, they're getting more savvy, just like buyers in outside of ag. So to your point, is selling yourself means that, and this is the first step before you leave the office. When you get the card that says I'm a sales rep for this company, the first thing you need to answer, and I got lucky with this because I had a customer hit me with it like a 2x4 the very first time I ever called on a prospect, and he asked me, why should I buy from you? Luckily, it was lucky. It was tough because I stammered and stammered and wandered out of the office. I don't even know how I got out of the office, but I got out. I got on my bag phone at that time and said, we need to figure this out. I called my boss and said, we need to figure this out because I need to know this answer. I didn't even know. And yeah. I relied on my company a lot in the early years because I didn't have the background. I didn't grow up on a farm. I didn't have my own horses or chickens or whatever the case is that I was selling. And I think to your point, you know, figure that out. Ask. And if you don't know the answer, go ask your other salespeople. How would they answer? And, you know, the people that are doing really well have probably figured it out. They figured out how to be that trusted advisor, or, hey, here's what I do, or, you know, whatever the case is, here's how I answer that. So you're not alone in that. I think that's a very valid struggle for so many people in the agribusiness world. And to your point, they get our customers get called on by an army of salespeople. I don't care what, if you're there calling on farmers or you're calling on ag retailers or ag buyers or any kind of buyers, really, every product that they have, every SKU that they buy, they're called on by, number one, the company they buy from, and number two, and 10 and 20 times the prospects. You know, if you look at seed, right, you know, there's probably 20 seed reps in a given area, and they're all calling on the producers. Yeah. So, I mean, they all have a lot of the same data. So the difference is really you. And so, but anyway, back to your point, I think that's a very valid and for people to figure that out early on.
You're okay. I just wanted to touch on, you know, you said why buy from you. And one of the things, and it's really how we met, to be honest with you, Greg. I reached out to you via LinkedIn. Just because I wanted to extend my network a little bit.
Sure.
Listen, today, the product and service that I sell, there's no competition in what we're able to do.
Sure.
And what we're able to capture and how we do it. You know, there's companies that'll sell you a drone. We do not sell you the drone. We sell you the service. We go capture the data and we bring it to you. So it doesn't require you to go out and fly a drone, all those other things. Generally speaking, and I don't know this, you know, statistics specifically for my company, but generally speaking, you're about 2 years out before the competition catches up to you. So I know that, I understand that. What I want to do is I want to help my retailers position themselves, anticipate, position themselves against the pitfalls in the future.
Sure.
And so one of the things that I, you know, for example, one of the things that I think is extremely important for a retailer to have is a highly trained sales team. And what do you do for a living? So I figured I would, if I believe in that, I need to help foster those or bring that. That'd be something that I bring to the table. Absolutely. You know, just the ability to connect them to resources to help them.
Well, I appreciate themselves. That's great. Absolutely.
But back to your, you know, selling yourself and what value do you bring? You got to have that story, that value. When I was selling seed, we always called it value outside of the bag. Now I call it value outside of the service
and
product. So,
and I always thought, just to kind of go back to that, I mean, I thought of a good sales rep as in the seed business. But to know that one of their biggest roles was obviously which seed to use, but it was also hustling seed varieties around when this ran out and that ran out and what's available and what we can find and what tier level we were on as far as getting inventory. And so that was, you know, that's out, like you said, that's value outside the bag, and you can call that whatever you want, but that's the difference of what gets your phone to ring when six other people are doing the same thing that you're doing. So what is, let's go shift gears a little bit. So that's your biggest challenge. What's been your greatest reward or greatest moment in selling that you said, hey, and then we can stay with this year in the role that you're doing, or, you know, maybe a moment in your career that you say, hey, this was the best part about selling in agribusiness.
I've always aspired, and I will not claim to be this by any stretch of the imagination, but I've always aspired to be a savvy businessman. My mom has a piece of paper, you know, when you're a kid in elementary, you do these, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
And, you know, I had all these, and mine was businessman. And it's really funny because I don't ever remember that until she's digging through her, you know, her little tub of stuff one day. And she sees that. And I'm like, oh, that isn't that something? You know, I mean, just I don't ever remember writing that. But I remember, you know, I got an ag business degree. I enjoy business. Developing that partnership there are some intelligent people that run these operations. So once you develop that partnership and getting to have a conversation with them, asking questions and learning from them, and just, you know, being seen as a partner has probably been the most rewarding thing that I see in this job. And hey man, commission's great, but when you're established as a partner and you're the guy that they call, and you know, you have a conversation about how do we help you, you know, you've got these issues, how do I help you? I mean, that's to me, that's the best reward. For sure.
That's awesome.
Learning from some of those guys.
And that's the stuff that you'll remember. I have I'll say you're wise beyond your years because, you know, when I had the learning experience of completing a career in sales, I still sell. I'm working for myself, but I had a chance to end a long career where I got to establish myself in an industry and do some of those. And you're right. You got to keep the lights on. You got to pay the bills. So commission's important and sales success is important from your company's results. But what you really get done when you're done at the end of 10, 20, 30 years, whatever it is, you look back on those impacts. So my goal in selling is having an impact on the lives of the people that I work with. That always kind of keeps me true to, I want to sell a lot, I want to accomplish, but I want to make that impact. And those are the things that you remember, you know, how you help somebody during a pivotal moment in their business. And you were a difference in their life in some particular way, you know, helping them get through emotionally or financially or time-wise, or you got them into a different category or a different avenue. And that's the fun part about doing training is you get to enlighten people a little bit on our industries in some cases in our role. You know, I've had people at career fair say, I'd never go into sales. I don't want to do that. And I always ask, that's the first thing in mind, start asking better questions is, well, why do you say that? And oftentimes it's misinformation or misunderstanding or a poor view of, you know, what the career really involves. There's so much reward in being a part of a trusted advisor to a customer and being a part of their decision, whether they kill a product line or add a product line or launch into something new or whatever the case is, you get a front row seat to that. And you get to influence. The more trust you have, the more you get to influence it for them and for your company. So I think, let me ask you the last kind of question here I want to throw out here to you. And that is, what advice maybe would you have for somebody that's going down that path We have the number one researched hiring job is sales in the agribusiness world. So we need, and we have a big demand for people to go into that selling world. What advice would you have for them?
The advice for those that, if you're thinking about getting out of ag sales, I would say, be honest with yourself and understand what is that reason why. Now, if it's hours, if it's, you know, whatever that is, I think you personally have to make that decision. But if it's just because you're having a tough time doing it, or you're having a hard time meeting goals or feeling successful, find a mentor and somebody that is going to be a positive influence, somebody that's going to really help coach you and get involved with you. Personally, I've never had a mentor, if you will.
Sure.
Like a structured mentorship.
Right.
But I was so fortunate. I was so fortunate when I got started in with the sales team in Michigan, that we had a very, very diverse group. There were some veterans on the team.
Sure.
And some of your middle-aged guys. And then there was a couple of us young ones. The veterans and the established guys were very, very, very good about answering our phone calls anytime we called, calling us to check on us just sometimes. Yeah. And giving us advice and helping us get through and helping us manage. I remember one in particular. He was one of the better salesmen, sales reps I've ever met. But he would say, "Look, I'm going to tell you. I can tell you what not to do because I've done it the wrong way."
Right.
So he would always tell me that. I think it was just his way of staying humble. But find you a mentor. Find you somebody to help you, to coach you. It's not comfortable to have conversations sometimes, if you know, to expose yourself, if you will.
Yep.
But you're not gonna grow unless you do.
Absolutely.
You're not gonna grow if you don't get into a mode where you're uncomfortable. And that's absolutely, you know,
being able to mentor through the mental things that go on with selling. You know, you talked about selling yourself, the first sales to yourself. You have to have the confidence. How do you get the confidence? You know, it's like the old age old question.
Yeah.
You know, how do I have the courage and knowledge that I'm going to be successful? And so that's different for everybody. So that's absolutely great advice. Absolutely.
So for somebody getting in, I would say, well, you know, make sure you've got a good team around you to help you get going. Be passionate. Here's the thing about passion. Look, I could be passionate about duck hunting. I love to duck waterfowl hunt.
Sure.
Probably not going to pay the bills that way.
Yeah,
right. But if I did, I could be very, very passionate about it, just naturally. And so I developed my passion. If I go back and I think about, you know, coaching, that's a big part of what you're doing as a sales rep with a brand that's in, you know, in retail. The only way that I could really influence guys is to get them in my camp. And so how do you get them in your camp? Well, you gotta help them. You gotta coach them, and then they'll sell your product, right? Hey, sure. James helped me. I'm going to help him. That kind of thing. I remember thinking, I didn't want to coach because I just didn't know how. Nobody told me how. They just said, "Hey, you need to coach your guys." Like, well, okay, that's good. So I got some direction and I started doing it. I became passionate about it. To the young salesmen that are already in it right now and they're just trying to get their feet under them. The advice I would give you guys is, number one, be organized. That's a big, big thing for me. Being organized. It kind of goes into the next one as far as being prepared.
Sure.
Organization kind of leads to preparation, but you still have to put your time in before you go on that call. Do that pre-call plan. That I'm telling you right now, that is the biggest game changer for me.
Yeah.
When I understood how to really properly do a pre-call plan, sit down, think about, number one, what is my goal? Why am I going to take this customer's time?
Yeah.
And what questions do I need to ask to get there to attain my goal?
Absolutely.
So another, and I heard this at a sales training a couple of years ago, and I thought this was the best analogy ever. When you played intramural sports in college, what did you do to prepare for that game?
Probably
nothing really. No, I mean, no, you just no, showed up. Right?
You kind of just showed up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you might have drank a beer before you got there. I don't
know, but, yeah.
What does a professional athlete do to prepare for their game?
Sure.
I mean, they got hours and hours and they're in before, after. They've got a lot of time invested.
Absolutely.
Do you want to be an intramural seller or do you want to be a professional seller?
That's a great analogy.
And I thought,
absolutely.
I thought that was a perfect analogy. I've used that ever since. Be curious. Back to the questions.
Carnegie.
Yeah. So one of the things he talks about is in his How to Win Friends and Influence People is you know, just ask questions, be curious about them, have them talk, get them talking. Don't talk about yourself. Like, get them talking about themselves. For example, the industry standard across most retailers, and this, I've been from Michigan to Missouri and a lot in between, and everybody does a two-pass system, or they recommend a two-pass system for your crop protection. But I don't assume that for everybody. I'll ask that question. They might have something they want to share with me on why they recommend it, or, you know, whatever it may be. I could just walk in there and assume, but I don't. Hey, do you recommend, what's your recommendation for, you know, two-pass? Yeah. Oh, we do a two-pass, and we like to do a two-pass because it gives us the opportunity to identify nutritional deficiencies and add something to the customer's, you know, application while we're already going across it, or whatever it may be, whatever. So be curious, ask questions, don't assume. Again, be passionate. Theodore Roosevelt, you know, he said this: no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Sure.
And absolutely. So, you know, be passionate and be patient. That is year one, year two, year three. It's a grind. You're going to call on people. You're going to get told no. You're eventually going to find your basic customers. Sure. You're going to do well, but you got to be patient. Year one, you're not going to hit a home run year one.
You bet.
Be patient and be optimistic. The number one characteristic of a successful salesman is an optimistic salesperson.
Sure.
You're going to be told no, you're going to get put in the dumps. This kind of goes back to the mentor thing. Just having that person to talk to in those dump days. We all have days where this just suck, but be optimistic and ask for the order. You have to get comfortable with asking for what you want. What is your goal?
Right.
Ask for it. They're never going to give you anything. You made this comment about the stigma that salesmen get. And I read a book from Zig Ziglar, and I can't remember the name of the book. Zig Ziglar's like top closing secrets or something.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yep.
But he made this comment about salesmen built America or built this world. Really, nobody's going to buy until you tell them why they need to buy.
Exactly.
You need a salesman. You need a salesman to do that. Be proud of what you do. It can come up with a bad stigma. You don't have to be that statistic.
Right.
You know, be proud of what you do and ask for that order.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, in a nutshell, that's kind of a lot of what you just walked through is a lot of the steps is through training is how do I know what I need to do? How do I get the mental strength to go back and do it and to remain what I call genuine optimism? You know, cause there's a lot of negativity in our industry, especially it's almost like a culture, to be negative, because it's whoever, whether, you know, whatever you want to, you pick any topic, politics, local regulations, anything can become a negative when you're farming and it's easy to jump into that bandwagon. But so those are some of the absolute key steps, I think that salespeople need to go through. Well, James, I really appreciate you being here with us today.
Thanks, Greg. You know, if you're listening to this and you want to follow me, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, James Hulsey, Hulsey. You can find me there. I'm not really active on anything else. I do have a Facebook. I do have a Twitter. I just use Twitter really for my personal digestion of news. But LinkedIn, I'm pretty active on. So.
Absolutely. Go out there and see what you're posting on and stay active. And we'll see you on the road.
Thanks, Greg.
I hope today's podcast helped you on your journey to be the best ag sales professional possible. Now, you can always access more blog articles, podcasts, and training opportunities, both virtual and in person, on my website at www.gregmartinelli.net. Thank you and have a great day.